Guys, we're continuing our tour in Switzerland, and we are at the Holzbach Schweiz School for Carpentry. We're gonna give you guys a full tour of this school and everything that they got going on. We learned about things like the fact that it's required by a lot of these trades, especially the bigger companies, for their apprentices to go to school. And it's actually not even just a one-year program, it's a four-year program. And joining me is gonna be Mike Connolly from Greenside in Chicago.
Fancy meeting you here, Nick.
Yeah, fancy, well, we toured together. But I wanna really talk about, you know, some of the intricacies that they're working on, how in-depth they go about not just the technical skill set, but the theory.
For sure. I was particularly impressed by how in-depth they get at such a young age in training these youngsters to be carpenters.
I think they start around like 15, 16 years old.
They're 16, yes. So it's really impressive. I'd love to see just exactly how they set up the course of education and what they actually do.
Yeah. So let's go inside. We'll walk you guys through it, and we'll show you what they have going on. So walking in directly off the street, you have this full-scale mock-up of a home that they have going on. Let's come back to this. You know, one of the things you and I talk about a lot is the lack of education in U.S. And one thing that we were talking about when we get over to our that roof mock-up is the fact that they're not just teaching on how fast you can do something, but really the theory behind what they're doing and making that actually the primary focus of the education.
Yeah, like when I started in construction and I was on the job site, there was no real teaching theory or, you know, the basics behind it. It was you kind of get thrown to the wolves and you learn as you go along, and you learn by making mistakes. I think when they start off here and learn the theory behind it, it gives a much better sense of direction of where they want to go, how they want to build, and the general purpose of it all.
Yeah, and one of the first things I saw when we came in, as I splinter a piece of the wood off it, was this. And you know, right away I'm like looking at that joint, and I had opened it up and I said, oh, that's not just a small, simple joint. It's actually a pretty complex joint that one of the kids and students had done by hand. And you know, this really set, I think, the tour up for, okay,
yeah,
we're gonna see some stuff.
We're not carpenters.
Despite what, I'm getting a lot of flack on this tour for being a master carpenter, which it was on my business card at one point. It is no longer on my business card, but I've taken the brunt of the abuse today.
So as it was explained to us, when they start off in the program, they go through all the different hand tools that they use so that they know what they're talking about, what they do, and it kind of progresses down from the basic hand tools all the way down to power tools and the modern day tools that they use today. Some of these, you know, I haven't seen in quite some time or at all, to be honest with you, like these wooden hand planes.
Yeah, I know we have a similar one, I think Lee Nelson, and I feel like I'm saying that wrong, but in our cabinet shop. But this one, I mean, this one looks fancy. Swiss made, feels like it probably operates pretty smooth. But these stay on display. So one of the things that he said is, as they're teaching and learning and they're going through curriculum or they're going through maybe like a textbook, you know, the kids can come out here and pick this up and be like, oh, okay, now I understand what that was, you know, in that photo or in that book. And they stay here on display for those reasons, similar to the timber frame joints. But as you work your way down, same thing, you know, you have the hammers. You and I both picked this up and said, well, what is that? And we asked the question in English, but I got a German response, but it's for slate tile, which makes sense once you kind of know that.
There's a lot of slate roofing in this country.
It's funny, it looks like it broke.
Yeah, it's not broken.
It's not broken. So working down, this was interesting. I had not seen a tape measure like this, and I was actually very confused at why you would need a tape measure like that, until we got to the stuff hanging up on the wall here. And they had basically set this display up, and he said it's not really part of the curriculum, but the importance of understanding where the wood comes from.
Correct. And these are the tools that you would see a lumberjack, as we call them in our country. This is the tools that they use to cut the logs, and obviously that's what's the wood that they use comes from the logs, and they wanted to give them an idea of how they're made, how they're transported, how they're cut. Mm.
And there's that, you know, that different type of tape measure that you might use to measure the log. And as we work our way through, you'll actually see some of the, you know, logs cut and divvied up and show the different way that a log can be cut, you know, quarter sawn, rift sawn, plane sawn. I've never really thought about that in the sense that we get rough material in our shop all the time, and we take it for what it is. It's rough material.
Yeah.
But to think about where it came from and how it came, you know, how it was transported, how it was cut down, in the forest, all of that stuff makes, you know, is important to the end result. And the more respect you have for that, I think, the better you're able to kind of adapt to the natural being of something like.
It's a question we get quite often, actually, when we're selecting materials, you know, do you want regular cut or do you want rift cut? And when you have a log and it shows the actual dimension or profile of the log, which way it's cut, it's kind of easy to explain what regular saw cut and rift cut is. So maybe
it also really helps you understand why it's more expensive.
Yes.
Because you're not able to get as much out of it when you cut it in a particular manner.
Exactly.
So flipping around, I loved this display that they had. It's all in German, but they basically took some of these rough sawn planks that they would have, you know, got at the sawmill, and then added all of the information behind it. I don't have my phone on me, but Google Translate was a huge help here. You can actually hold it over and it gives you the rundown of what we have going on. But again, you're just furthering the education as you come through this hallway, and then we get into some of the power tools and Lamello, biscuit joiner. They have this one here, which is a dual doweler, which I have not seen before, made by Mefel. But again, just going back to your point, like, they're walking you through kind of understanding all of these tools, always have the opportunity to look at them and understand kind of even the progression of them. Where it's like, hey, this is we have a Festool track saw here, and the track, you understand what the benefit of it, but before you get to use that, you're likely going to be using a regular skill saw and appreciate, you know, what it takes to keep that blade straight.
It's like a carpenter's dream coming into this school. You know, you start off at the beginning, you learn about the wood, you learn about, and some of these descriptions tell you how it smells.
Right.
When we were looking at that. So that, and to me, that's, you're just so in depth. It's like you love wood right here. So progressing down to the tools, see the material that the tools work on, telling you how it's going to react, if it's a hardwood, a softwood, smells. It's just, you know, so many of us on this tour are carpenters or carpenter based. So it's pretty cool.
Yeah, and our level has changed. Especially being here, I feel like I've knocked down a few points, which is fine. I'll take it. And then these are awesome. These are all, you know, he actually said very old, but I feel like they're maybe the original or early versions of the Mefel timber tools. You have a chain mortiser, you have the drill press, you have a big planer here, and then some big timber saws. But they still make these tools almost exactly the same, just maybe a little bit more plastic.
Yeah.
And probably more powerful. And you know, at least more safe. We're okay to go in?
Yes, yes.
Awesome. So this is the room that we started really feeling as though we had to take.
Yeah, this is the room that took us down a notch.
Yeah. So why don't we start with this mock-up? This right here, this is not a very square setup. Very complex. You have, you know, this is probably your most common rafter here, but from this point, everything else becomes more complex. You have a beveled hip. You have a beveled valley. You have, you know, a horizontal cut with, you know, a common tail. Then you have your hip rafters. Then you have this here, which is
angled rafters.
An angled rafter.
It's cool. You know, this is basically their assignment. They're given this sheet in 2D and 3D, and they basically have to build this from this using all the techniques that they were taught. And then they're given a certain amount of hours to actually complete this.
Yeah, we had asked. I think it's 4 days to do this one.
Correct.
Which, I mean, sounds like a lot of time. I don't know if I could do this in 4 days.
No, especially it's all hand tools that they're.
Yes.
Most of the cuts are from hand tools, not power tools.
So I missed that in our tour. Is this all they're giving?
That's all they're giving.
So they have to take that, you know, from. I mean, thankfully they're just labeling the parts, and you know, there's not much information to go off. So why don't we flip over to one of these tables here? And do you mind if we stand here? I think he's in the zone. So everything that was on that paper, he's transferred in multiple ways on this drawing. So this right here is basically a view straight down.
Yes, and this is drawn to full scale, so they can take their actual timber pieces and lay them over, trace them, get all their points, and then start cutting basically.
Yeah, and then you can see right there, it's almost like an isometric view where I've seen him drop that timber, and he's, you know, if you look closely on those, there's a lot of reference lines, and he's got all these reference lines. Again, I mean, even color-coded, you got, it looks like, you know, red, green, brown, green, red, or orange.
So again, this all comes back to how detailed the training is here compared to what we have in the States. It's night and day. And I think if we had something like this in the States, you know, that position as a carpenter or master carpenter, as you are, Nick, is more desirable and is a kind of a sexier appeal that'll bring more people into the industry.
Yeah, and this, we're going to harp on this a lot, but it's really about understanding the theory and understanding how to get to that, right? Where it's like you could essentially figure this out without doing all the layout. You'd have to probably cut multiple times, you'd be pulling measurements and building templates and figuring it out, but this gives you the true appreciation of what these pieces look like in different views, and really makes you understand like why certain things are cut at the angle, and then, and also of course the math behind it. It's hard for me to talk so much about it because it's almost as though I don't understand. Because like that, you know, I understand that, but in the view here and even understanding it from the paperwork, there's a lot that...
It's like, very complex.
So year 4 assignment is one of... Basically, they'll get graded on the complexity of that. And I think we saw maybe year 2 or something in the other room here. A lot of that in that room there is all being done by hand. Like Mike said, you know, they're cutting all of those angles by hand. And like one of the students said, you know, even the drawing is done by hand, but they eventually move into doing this on CAD. So we're stepping into one of the next shops, and you can see they have the more technologically advanced tools that eventually they'll be able to start learning on that and figuring out how to do those compound cuts and rafters on the power
tools. There's pretty complex saws in here. I'm going to the next.
There's
room
a pretty impressive one in the next room. I've never seen that ever. Before we go in that room, this right here, I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, they said that, you know, once you get through your 4-year program here, you can come back and get into like kind of accelerated courses where it's like you want to focus on stairs, they can help you focus on stairs.
Yeah, more complex carpentry. You can see on the stairs here, all the standoffs, the way the treads are kind of suspended, the spindles, which are hanging off the rail, and all the connections are hidden. It's really a piece of art, if you ask me.
Yeah, very impressive. Do we know what this saw is called?
Called it a reverse table saw.
Reverse table saw. So this monster here, this Cruci, we'll call it,
Cruci. Yes.
What we have going on is they take a piece of wood and they have a fence here and then a fence there that moves in and out. I'm not going to play with it. I've never touched it. But there's a saw down there and it can cut up to 7 inches, but it lifts up and then it runs down the table. So yeah. I think...
Essentially the guard drops down.
Yeah, this comes down.
Guards. It's adjustable to the depth of your wood that you're cutting. And once it drops down, the blade pops up and essentially comes right across. So you can cut approximately a 16-foot long piece of board.
That's 7 inches deep.
That's 7 inches deep, which is really
impressive. Timber, and it's all foot operated here. So I believe when you hit that pedal, that blade spins, comes up, and will run down the table till you lift your foot off of it. And then this fence here moves in and out, is an indexed off of this digital readout here, so you know how wide you're gonna be cutting them.
Another cool feature they have in all their shops is the dust collection system. So all this system, which looks pretty conventional, runs back to a compact system, and they compress all of their dust and shavings and actually use 50% of those shavings to heat the building. So they're trying to reuse as much as possible and have less waste.
I think that's, and one thing that they were pretty open about is that it's an old building and they're looking to continually improve this building because it, you know, in the winter they're using 50% to heat it, but they're using a lot of energy, and they can continue to make it more energy efficient. We'll take a look at that dust collector so you can see what that looks like. But this is, I believe, the year two, right?
Yeah.
So this over here, their grading system works 1 through 6. And then he had mentioned that this student got a 4.5. And I think you may have asked, like, what makes it a 4.5?
So the passing grade is a 4. So 4 and below, you're no good. You have to go back to the drawing board, so to speak. This particular project got a 4.5, and let's show you the points where they graded.
And every single person here that framed or has framed said that they wouldn't have been able to do this first shot. And it is, you know, it is a framing detail or a framing mock-up. And there's a lot of it that, you know, I want to call attention to the fact that a lot of this is unnecessary when it comes to framing on a more traditional basis. But the point is to understand, again, the theory as to why it's put together like this. Do you guys mind if we squeeze in here?
Yeah, sorry.
That's okay. So what we have here is an irregular valley, essentially, is what we have. And, you know, again, we have one of the more common hip rafters, valley rafters here. And then you have this one that's actually on an angle as well. But, you know, stuff like the beveled valley rafter, you know, you'll have the argument it's unnecessary. It can very much be the case. But the point isn't, hey, this is the way you should be doing it on every job. It's, hey, you need to understand why and how to do it, because then you can make the educated decision in the field as to, I should cut that on a bevel or not. And Tim Euler and I were talking about this as, you know, sometimes it's unnecessary, but there's times where, you know, that plywood comes together at a really odd angle or creates maybe
a bump
or even a gap between the sheathing. And if you're using something with like zip and have a tape and you have a gap between your plywood and you're relying on that tape, now that there's a potential failure because that tape is unsupported. And if you think about it, like when you caulk a window, or in your bridging caulking, they always say to backer rod, and because that backer rod needs 3 points of contact. When you only bridge, it might work temporarily, but over time, it's not going to have that supportive backer rod.
So when you talk about it being unnecessary, to me, that's a pure American point of view. Unnecessary because it's going to create more time or more delay. This, I feel, is something that's done to do it right. They take their time. And it's not about how fast I can get it done. It's how correct can I get it done. Mm-hmm. And to me, that's kind of a differentiator between the carpenters in our country and the carpenters here.
And again, it's really just about understanding how to get to that best result. And yes, there's always going to be scale back, you know, but you need to understand how to get to the best result.
And nobody's perfect. Like, this is a 4.5. So you can see here they marked, you know, where their errors are. Now, to me, these errors are pretty insignificant. Yeah. You know, the screws aren't driven all the way home. You've got some gapping and they're not on plane here. But really, besides that, it looks almost like a trim carpenter did it, not a framing carpenter.
Right, and like this would be more than sufficient to support a roof. But yeah, it was this, you know, there's a slight, you know, height difference here, less, you know, probably a 16th at the max, things like that. And even over here, you know, the cut is chipped out. They got points taken out from that. And one of the craziest ones to me is that. And that's a tool mark. And then they got that. They were reflected poorly because of the tool mark on it. And it really is. It's challenging you to do your best work. And this one, I think, is a 4-hour test.
Yeah.
So, you know, a little bit more simple. I say that. A little bit more simple than the one in the other room, but it's designed to be a shorter time frame and, you know, less
challenging.
Challenging, yeah. Let's continue working our way through. Why don't we go this way, Mike? You had mentioned that dust collector. I think it's interesting because when you walk by it, you know, you think of a dust collector as this giant machine with a bunch of tubes and bags that collect dust, and this does not do any of that. It's actually a pretty high performance unit that spits out, like you said, these pucks. Let me see if I can reach one. So why don't you walk through that, what you just said?
So yeah, the system collects it and it actually compresses it into these little, I guess we'll call them...
Pellets? Yeah.
Pellets.
Oversized hamster pellets.
And, you know, they're pretty dense. Break them. But they reuse these. They burn them in the wintertime to help heat the building. It's an older building, so it needs a little help, you know, as far as heating and cooling. But it's pretty neat.
That's cool. And this is the unit itself here. Again, like, you're not seeing all the bags and all the filters, like, it's contained. I mean, the simple thing of it's clean looking is, you know, a big difference.
Of course it turns on.
I know. Here. So let's keep walking. This is where rough material comes in, kind of where everyone starts their journey, per se. A bunch of rough sawn over there, but you actually see some of the logs, and that's actually a great example up there as to what and how a log can be cut.
Exactly.
But really, this is where everything starts. And, you know, flipping around here, you know, this is a full-size mock-up. Mike, I didn't even notice the staircase on this.
It's pretty impressive. You take a look at the corner newel there, how tight the radius is.
Let's sneak behind these guys over here. So this is designed to have a ton of scenarios. There's roof details, there's cladding details, a lot of European cladding details at that. The staircase, you know, being more complex, all different riser details, you know, probably talking about how you achieve that code compliant riser detail in different ways.
Yeah, and it's basically taking a textbook and bring it into a 3D model, so to speak, where you can actually walk into it. So let's say they have a project where they have to build a stair. They can come here, they can take a look at how it's done, maybe grasp it better in their own mind, and then perform the task on their own.
I was explaining something and I was at, I'm glad you jumped in, because I was at a loss for words, because I hadn't even walked, I have not walked through this yet, and it's quite impressive in many ways. This is a pretty common commercial detail. You have this thin fiber cement panel, exposed fasteners, but I mean, they're walking through everything. You know, you see the Siga Fentrum tape, you know, how they're waterproofing.
I think this is a great detail too, because as we've been here in the country, I've noticed these on almost all the windows, these flashing details, the kick-out flashing on top of the sill detail. It's just,
it's solid aluminum. It's very similar, actually, to what we had done in our Rhode Island Passive project. And I think we may have used a slightly thinner material and we ended up powder coating them, but it's, you know, obviously that pulling that European detailing into, you know, what we're trying to achieve from a execution level.
Another great detail I've noticed on almost all the buildings here, and you probably do it a lot in New England, not so much in the Midwest where we are, but is the rain screen. And the rain screens here are pretty significant. There's a pretty large gap for drying, which, you know, if you're trying to build on a higher level of building science, is very important.
And, you know, I had not noticed this before, but they're also bringing this all the way to a finish and walking through some of the finish details. So it looks like on the left here, you have more of a cement based board, probably in preparation for waterproofing and tile. And then you have your blue board, which is something we see a lot in Boston, not so much in the all over the US, but the start of what that plaster looks like. And you can see that it starts at the seams, and then in this case, it looks as though it has three steps from scratch coat to final finish coat. Big thanks to the school for allowing us to not only film, but tour, and Siga for having us here in Switzerland. What can we do, whether it's us, like, I think the whole group is so interested in, like, really bringing what we learned here back to the States and actually trying to get something like this in place? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, yeah, this is a discussion that we've been going back and forth with for quite some time. You know, us in the, I'll call it the Instagram community of builders, I think we really need to come together and maybe not one guy go off on his own or two guys go off. If we all put our heads together, and try and come up with a way to promote this type of education in our country, make it so that going into the trades is cool, not just something for the lunkheads, basically. You know, that's kind of the stigma around our profession. But when you see something like this and how professionally it's done and how precise and the care that they take, and honestly the pride, you know, the students are in class and there's no goofing around, they're not joking around, they're not listening to loud music, they're totally focused on the project at hand and they're getting it done at a high level.
Yeah, and it's, you know, there's a lot of other interesting things about the school we learn about. Is it's a nonprofit. It's funded by, you know, some of the companies that are hiring these kids. When you come to the school, we mentioned it's a four-year school. They're actually required to get a four-year contract with, you know, what we would say a builder or a general contractor, in efforts to then invest in that student. The student pays nothing out of pocket. You know, this is a commitment and some sort of contract that they're writing to come here and actually go from zero to, you know, a master carpenter.
Yes,
or on
go.
Their way to be a master carpenter. And, you know, there's so many people out there that are doing things in the U.S. and we have to give credit where credit is due. You know, between all of the YouTube content from a promotional and educational standpoint, educational over promotional standpoint, and then of course, you know, things like MT Copeland that is bringing e-learning into the space, and, you know, structured e-learning, I should say. And then, you know, of course, the North Bennett Street School of Carpentry in Boston, and which we've toured and we've shared on our page. But the, you know, all of those things are so introductory to the trade, where the interest might be there and we can introduce them and get them at a basic level. But this is beyond that. This is four years of dedicated work. And like you said, those kids aren't in there goofing around. They're head down, and they've been here for three, four years already. So they know what they're committing to, and they're trying to get to a very high level from a quality standpoint, and they're dedicated. And I think that, you know, like you said, it's us coming together and realizing that, yes, there's great content being produced in e-learning and in these schools, but we need to band together and figure out, we need to bring, you know, more to the table so people are being trained on quality over, you know.
True. And let's be honest, a big part of that is the funding.
Right.
You have to find the funding, and they were kind enough to share with us how this whole operation is funded. Some of it is funded through the government. There's another percentage that's funded where they actually produce work or services for the local community. But most of it is provided, most of it is provided by the companies that they signed that contract with, which you mentioned before, to actually train the student, and then they go to work for that company. During that training, they actually work for their company. So it's a benefit to both. The student gets a free education, and the company, the sponsoring company, gets a carpenter basically during those 4 years. So it's another idea. It's something maybe we can look towards to having some of our larger general contracting companies, maybe they can kick in a little bit, because as we all know, there's a huge labor shortage right now, and it's only gonna get worse.
Yeah. So guys, comment below if you guys are interested in seeing a school like this in the US. And if you are, what you would love to focus on. And if you're completely new to the trade and want to get, you know, involved, follow us on Instagram, shoot me a message. I'd love to talk to you one-on-one and really help start moving, you know, the U.S. into education like this. We're going to continue our Switzerland tour. Big thank you to SIGA for having us. We'll see you guys in the next episode.
I just want to add a little bit too, say a big thanks to Nick for having me on site visit. I'm a huge fan, as many people are on YouTube. I think you're a big part of the reason why some of us are found a new love for this industry, and why you're going to bring more young people into this industry. So keep doing what you're doing.
Appreciate it, Mike. Thanks, man.